Well, we are really complete newcomers to this turbulence business, and therefore I think it is very gracious of the organizers to give us a few minutes to tell you a little bit about results we've obtained over the last 3 or 4 months, I would say, since we've been actually measuring things. We have a long tradition of highly accurate heat transport measurements in various systems, including pattern formation in non-equilibrium systems, usually close to the threshold, at least as seen from the perspective of this conference. But it occurred to us that the techniques that we've developed for highly accurate and precise heat transport measurements should have some applicability in the problem of turbulent Rayleigh-Binard convection. So that's what I want to tell you about. Our goal is limited for the time being. We are not looking at any local properties of the flow. We have only looked at the global properties, namely the heat transport. That is the Nusselt number. And we would like to measure N of R and sigma. Sigma is the Prandtl number, and these are room temperature experiments. These are tabletop experiments in a small apparatus. They are not like the Oregon cell that's a meter high. So again, the range of parameters we will cover is relatively narrow. It's 10 to the 6 to 10 to the 11. That's about as high as we can get with room temperature fluids in an apparatus in a cell that is 20 centimeters tall. And the Prandtl number range we hope to cover eventually is from 4 to 34 using different fluids. Today I will only tell you about some results for acetone, which has a Prandtl number of 4. I will jump straight to some results and show you the usual log-log plot that makes everybody look beautiful, because everything falls in a nice straight line. Oh, it would be even better, wouldn't it? We have 4 different sets of data from our lab. Aspect ratio 12, 3, 1, and a half. The aspect ratio is the diameter divided by the height of a cylindrical vessel. And they all have about the same slope here. There are some other data shown. These pluses are the French data by Chavannes and co-workers. They, on this scale, agree very nicely with ours. There are some data hidden away here by Liu and Ecky. All falls in the same ballpark. There are measurements by Ashkenazi and Steinberg here, which are a factor of 1.5 higher than anybody else's, and we don't know the reason for that. Well, this graph isn't going to tell us very much, so we are going to have to do something to increase the resolution with which we present the data. And for that, we... Pardon? Could you speak up? Ask it. Yes. Why don't you let me present the rest of the talk, and you'll see it much more explicitly. Okay? Where were we? Okay, we want to have a better representation of these data, so we fall back on some theoretical predictions that have been made. There is a tremendous tendency, I have found out at this conference, to write things in terms of power laws. Now, power laws are not necessarily the laws of nature that govern things. We know that many mathematical functions in certain limits asymptotically approach power laws. That is something that that one knows, but in experimental ranges of parameters, there is not always a good reason to assume that there is a power law. But many of the theories that have been made have this form: Nusselt is proportional to Rayleigh to some exponent gamma, and a particularly popular theory in the early 1980s, I guess, was that gamma is 2/7. So let us use this to reduce the data and have a closer look. So we plot Nusselt times Rayleigh to the minus 2/7, which, if gamma were 2/7, should be a constant independent of Rayleigh. And we plot it on a log-log scale against the log of Rayleigh. And if there is a power law with an exponent other than 2/7, we should, on this graph, get data that fall on a straight line with a slope that would be equal to gamma minus 2/7. Well, here are the gamma equals 12 data. Well, you will argue they are at Rayleigh numbers that are too small. Good, let's ignore them. Then here's gamma equals 3. Here's gamma equals 1. And gamma equals 1/2. And nowhere would you say a straight line is a very good description of these data. So there is no power law. There is locally a power law, which you can define as the logarithmic derivative of this function. And if you do that, then the local exponent will change from something less than 2/7 to something greater than 2/7 as you go from Rayleigh of order 10 to the 6 to 10 to the 11. Now, I've shown some other data here. The Chavan et al. Data are shown here. And they are, I think, typical in their scatter of other measurements that had been made. There are ones by the Liebschreiber group. There are the Oregon data that that Russ told us about. And more or less, they sort of have scatter at the level of 1% or so. No need to be more specific. Whereas these data have scattered at the level of 0.1%, and they bring you new information, namely that a power law is not a good description of the data. Pardon? Well, we do things our way, and other people do things their way, and I cannot tell you exactly the difference. But I will say that, you know, we have developed certain skills in heat transport measurements by 3 decades of doing that sort of thing. And I cannot comment on the others. Quickly, a comparison with the Oregon data that Russ showed. And I checked with John Niemeyer, and he said it was okay for me to show these data. So, and they have been accepted for publication, I hear. They are in a cell of gamma equals 0.5, and of course they go to this incredibly high Rayleigh number of 10 to the 17. This is the lower end where they overlap with ours. This is our 1/2 cell. And of course you must realize that the Prandtl number here is about 0.7, whereas our Prandtl number is 4. And there certainly is very good consistency between the Oregon data and our measurements when you consider that that the Prandtl number is a little different. And aside from that, you know, the difference is maybe 3% or so, and people do have systematic errors. So I would say it's very gratifying to see that very good agreement. Yeah. 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 I beg your pardon?
Is it a fair remark to make that you have to depend on the higher rating of the data in order to make the remark of
our data? About our data?
In general. I mean, these are low ratings, but 10 or 8 is low.
Yeah.
Beyond that, if you had more expensive ones...
You mean to a higher Rayleigh numbers? That you would have a power law? I don't know. We haven't measured out here. No, certainly not. Boris? I will do that if I ever get that far before Srini throws me out. Let me move on. By the way, here are the Oregon data over the whole range. And, you know, you might now argue that, well, they don't really show a power law either, right, because the slope here is different from what the slope is there. right? And here you get Nomba-Zinesky effects maybe. So you could argue that there's curvature to the Oregon data as well. But this is not what the authors originally stated in there. They indeed, I mean, Russ told us they fitted the power law and got an exponent of 3.309. Now, the next thing I'm going to do is I will take these data, our data, that is, the Santa Barbara data, and I will fit a power law to them locally. And I will only use half a decade to determine a local exponent, and then do that for every half decade that I have. Then I get this effective exponent as a function of Rayleigh number on a log scale. Up here we have the gamma equals 1/2 data. Here we have the gamma equals 1 data, and the open circles are the gamma equals 3. And gamma equals 12 is probably below what I would consider a scaling region, right? So they're just there to show that things happen when you go to Rayleigh numbers that are too small. But here we find that the exponents all fall on a smooth curve, the experimental exponents. And that means that the data at different aspect ratios differ from each other only by a multiplicative constant that depends on the aspect ratio. Well, okay, no power law. And any theory that predicts a power law is apparently not relevant to these data. But there is another theory recently put forward by Grossmann and Lohse. And these people tell us that the Nusselt number should be a sum of two power laws. There's a Rayleigh to the 1/4, and then there's a Rayleigh to the 3/7. That particular 3/7 is supposed to be relevant when the Prandtl number is greater than 2. When it's less than 2, like for the Oregon data, the exponent here should be 1/3 rather than 3/7. So depending on Prandtl number, you get different functions according to their theory. Well, if this is the right function, then I can plot Nusselt over Rayleigh to the 1/4 against Rayleigh to the 5/28, and I should get a straight line. And here are the data, and the line is a least squares fit, and it works. So Grossmann and Lohse come out looking very good, but as you well know, you cannot prove by experiment that a theory is right. You can only sometimes prove that it is wrong when it disagrees with the data. So I want to take the experimentalist view here and just, you know, say it. We have not disproved it. Having done the Grossmann-Lohse fit, I can now take the Grossmann-Lohse function and calculate its logarithmic derivative. And that's this line on this figure here. And it's, you know, pretty consistent with the effective exponents that we get from the data. Just to show that the agreement with Grossmann-Lohse is somewhat non-trivial, let me try the other function that's supposed to be relevant when the Prandtl number is equal to 1. In that case, the function they propose is Rayleigh to the 1/4 plus Rayleigh to the 1/3. This should be relevant to the Oregon data, which are for a Prandtl number of 0.7. Our data do not fit that function. There are systematic deviations. Okay, so the 3/7 at this point is, you know, it's sensitive to what you put there. I don't know whether Bill George is still around, but he gave me a formula. He gave me an old paper that had another formula in it that he had predicted, and I tried it out. It's, you know, it has Rayleighs and Nusselts and things, so all kinds of different exponents. And when you plot the right parametric thing that should give you a straight line, well, it doesn't fit too well. And so that was just a little quick exercise last night. Well, we have seen that the exponents are independent of aspect ratio. That means that we can scale the data and collapse them onto a single function by multiplying by an aspect ratio-dependent constant. That is done here in the Grossmann-Lohse representation. We have this parametric plot here that Grossmann-Lohse suggests. And we have now taken the Nusselt numbers and normalized them to the Nusselt number for gamma equals 1. Right, here we multiply by 1. Here we had to multiply by 0.93. Here 1.13 and so on. Okay, that multiplication, aspect ratio dependent multiplicative factor, collapses the data onto a single curve, as you can see. And the Grossmann-Loser line is the line that's drawn through there. And now you can ask yourself, well, is there something going wrong up here maybe a little bit? It's small enough that I wouldn't want to make a big case for it on the basis of the data we have so far. But if we built a larger apparatus and cooked about 100 liters of acetone, we could get 2 decades further up to 10 to the 13 or so, and then we ought to be able to resolve this, but I'm not sure we're going to do that. That would be a fairly big undertaking. We can also do this collapsing of the data in the other plot that we've seen, n times r to the minus 2/7 against r on log-log scales. And now the data are all on a single curve. The solid line drawn through them is a Grossmann-Loser fit. And now we see again that things go a little bit bad here and things go a little bit bad here. No doubt they will argue that the Rayleigh numbers are too small here if they want to save their theory, and it's hard to argue against that. But up here, things should work, and I think there's more work to be done there. Now, let me make one point here. You know, 2/7 would have been a single horizontal line straight across, and a power law would have been a single line with a slope. So this, I mean, dramatically shows that there is no power law. But it shows that there is a scaling function, and I would like to make the distinction between a power law and a scaling function. I think that distinction is not always very clearly made. Things scale when you can collapse them by multiplying by a function of some irrelevant parameter, like the aspect ratio. Right? We have scaling here insofar as we can collapse the data onto a single curve, but we don't have power law scaling. Well, let's see. I think it is probably time that I finished up, because Srini has been very patient with me. So let me conclude. The power law does not fit the data for N of R of any significant range. So any theories which predict power laws, such as the one yielding an exponent of 2/7, are at best an approximation to the physical system. The proposal of Grossmann and Loser, that one has this crossover, fits the data reasonably well, but the behavior at high Rayleigh suggests that further experiments might be nice to carry out. And what we are just starting to do now is we want to look at the Prandtl number dependence, because Grossmann and Loser and other models predict very specific Prandtl number dependencies. And I think that may be an approach by which we can put the theories to a more severe test. These Prandtl numbers we can reach with classical liquids, and in the long run we want to use gases to look at one. And gas mixtures actually enable us to get to Prandtl numbers as small as 0.17. So that's sort of what's in the future coming up. Thank you. What it looks like.
Boys.
Let's see. Huh? You mean here? What? Oh, this room? Yeah. Well, I mean, we know, you know, we know what happens as a function of Prandtl number, at least from 4 to 34. We do have the data. And what happens is they collapse on the same curve, but they will the higher Prandtl number will peel off earlier. Okay? So the scaling regime starts at a higher Rayleigh number when the Prandtl number is higher. But beyond that, it's the same curve. Possible. I would love to have data of this resolution for Prandtl of 0.7, and someday I hope we get them. Well, Russ has only done one aspect ratio. Yeah. I mean, you raised several issues. First of all, I said that our data are in remarkably good agreement with the Oregon data. Okay, our aspect ratio 1/2 data are only 3% below the Oregon data, and there's a different Prandtl number. My goodness, why shouldn't they be 3% lower? There's no problem with that. The other point you make is about the aspect ratio dependence of exponents. Here are the local exponents for three aspect ratios. And they give, within their resolution, a single curve. Now, if you manage to look 10 times more closely, perhaps you will find something. I don't know. These are the Oregon data. I mean, Srini, it does look like there's a break here, or a change, or something. I mean, you know. What did you want? The exponents? Do you want those? Wait a minute. Huh? Yeah, what's the problem? I mean, I tell you precisely how they were obtained. We took the data for half a decade and fitted a power law to it. Then we took the next half a decade and fitted a power law to it. Now, I could make this look an awful lot better by proper numerical manipulation of the data. Okay? No, we didn't do anything fancy. I just took half a decade and fitted it. Oh, just one more comment. If somebody wants a preprint, I'm going to put some over here.